Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome everybody to Are You on an Amy Show? We haven't done one of these in a month.
Some weeks. Yeah, about a month, weeks. I think.
It's been a long time. All right. Oh my God. Roy says that all of YouTube is dropping Patreon as a protest. Have you lost any, Yaron? I'm sure I've lost a few, but I'm going to provide alternatives. I've got at least two other services that we're working on launching me on in the next few days. So I'm hoping that by the end of the week, I will be able to announce two additional services. We'll keep Patreon, but we'll add these other services as well. Just as backup, because you never know.
I'm going to have to ask you for that information, too.
Yeah, I'll have to get them to you as well. But yes, because you never know. And also, yeah, I mean, I don't like what Patreon's doing.
They have not reinstated him, right? They have not reinstated Sargon?
As far as I know, they're not reinstated Sargon. But I also, from what I hear through the grapevine, it's the Jordan Peterson is very upset. Of course, Jordan Peterson probably gets over $1 million over Patreon. So they get 5%. So they probably their whole revenue stream is basically Jordan Peterson and the rest of us, you know. If he moves, that would be a huge hit to Patreon. So I'm hoping he really rattles the people at Patreon significantly. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the biggest thing on Patreon. But we'll see. So far, I haven't heard anything. I've just heard that Jordan is very upset and he's rallying the intellectual dark web, or at least the non-fringes of the intellectual dark web, because he didn't send me an email. He sent it to everybody in the real.
So are you officially on the fringes? Is that how it works?
That's how I consider myself. I'm.
So I'm like on the fringe of the fringe.
I mean, Dave actually appointed me to the intellectual dark web. And when I did my session with Eric Weinstein, I asked him to officially, he didn't quite do it. So, I think fringe is good. I think I'm on the fringe of the intellectual dark web.
Okay, so I'm on the fringe of the fringe, which is pretty awesome.
Yes.
Can I tell a story, which I hope will be...
Oh, shit, I didn't update titles. All right, I mean, in the recording, we'll update the titles. I forgot to, let me see if I can, I don't think it'll let me update it now. I don't think Xpost it'll let me update titles.
Oh, you mean because you went into Zoom and had to restart it, and so then there's no updated title for what we're doing?
No, I have to go into Restream and update titles, and I don't know that that'll show. I just updated the titles, but I don't know if it'll show on YouTube. So, if you refresh your YouTube screen, it changed. The title changed. I love technology. It's so cool when it works. When it doesn't, it's not so cool. But
let me tell you my technology story then, okay? Right, because I've been gone for a few weeks and this happened since then. So on Thanksgiving weekend, I decided that I would look into my ancestry because I'm planning a trip to Scotland and I heard that I was Scottish in some way. So I wanted to find out. And another thing that I had heard in my past was that supposedly maybe I was descended from Patrick Henry, which would have been really
cool. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool, right?
I guess. Yeah.
You know, some time ago, I wasn't on an ancestry service, but I had gone back through my mother's, kind of genealogy a little bit. And I found some Henry, some Daniel Henry or something. And I traced it back a little and it was like, it didn't go back to Patrick Henry. Yeah. So I thought, oh, well, that's a dead, no problem, right? So then I'm on Ancestry and I start looking at my father's side. And it turns out if you go to my grandfather's mother, she was a Henry.
Okay.
And then you go back a little further to her father, and her father was this guy named Henry Henry.
Henry Henry. There's an original name.
Well, actually, there was this whole thing on my Facebook about, who names their kid Henry Henry? And, right, I think his name was Lori Henry Henry, but he preferred to be Henry Henry than Lori Henry. So
it's
whatever.
Easy.
Anyway,
Henry Henry is very efficient.
Yeah. So if you go on these ancestry websites, they have all of these great tools and people add all of their information. And then if you trace back to some common ancestor, then you can go into their tree and then keep tracing back from there. Right. So you can share information with other people. So on this website, there's a picture of this Henry Henry's gravestone.
Yeah.
and he died in Texas or whatever. And it says grandson of Patrick Henry.
Wow.
And so this is my third great grandfather. So you can imagine I'm sitting here going, oh my gosh, I really am descended from Patrick Henry. I thought I traced that all out, but it was gone. I have Henrys on both sides of my family. Okay. So I think, okay, this is just too good to be true. Why haven't I really heard this before? I mean, my father sort of talked about it, but it's like, wouldn't he have traced it back and really solidified it if it was true, right?
Yeah.
So I look a bit further back, and this Henry, his dad was George Lafayette Henry, born in, I think, Virginia. Yeah, born in Virginia, died in Tennessee. So then supposedly he was, you know, the grandson, I guess, of Patrick Henry through one of Patrick Henry's kids. Patrick Henry had 14 kids.
Oh, wow. So a lot of people are related to Patrick Henry.
Well, supposedly, right? So,
oh, 14 kids, you'd think.
Anyway, so this guy, I guess, some people thought that he was Patrick Henry's son, but he wasn't.
Okay.
Some people thought that he was Patrick Henry's grandson through an elder John Henry.
But he wasn't.
And it turns out you can't verify any of it.
Yeah.
And this was written in family Bibles. It's on this guy's gravestone in Texas, you know, Henry. It's in applications for those organizations like the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Oh, there you go. You people missed out on being able to go to the Daughters of the American Revolution.
So imagine, right? So I find the gravestone. I was like, wow, I'm descended from Patrick Henry. Then I look a little bit further back. No, actually, I'm not. The gravestone, I don't know who did the lying.
They just lied.
Whatever it says on that gravestone is not true.
But so let me give you the upside of the story is.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. You're still Amy. Nothing's changed. You're still the person you are with the character that you have. And, you know, you're still my co-host on the show. Although you could have said, I'm a descendant of Patrick Henry. Who's this you're on? You could have switched it to the Amy parentheses descendant of Patrick Henry and you're on show. So it doesn't matter. This is why I don't do family trees. Because I come from a long line of rabbis. So my family tree is pretty scary. Long line of rabbis, probably 30 generations back.
I actually had thought that I was descended from somebody who had done a version of a study Bible on one side. And it turns out, no, I dispelled that too. So I ended up saying, okay, well, I'm not related to Patrick Henry, which would have been pretty cool. But I'm also not descended from this study Bible guy. So that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I can.
But I'm over 20% Scottish, which I didn't know.
Wow. I can't escape my rabbis. Can't escape my rabbis. So, and not just rabbis. I mean, the real black, you know, the whole thing, you know. I think one of my ancestors invented the ultra-Orthodox Hasidic movement or something. I don't know.
The study Bible guy was kind of pretty.
As we said, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's a good part. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
But my great-grandfather on my mother's side
comes
from this area of Scotland where John Galt is from.
Oh, that's right. There was this whole thing about John Galt, who's an author. Have you ever read any of his stuff?
I have not yet. I've got it on
my stack.
I've got a copy of it. So I'm going to look.
John Galt
There's poetry
really
in there.
Yeah, he was quite a. I think he was not a minor figure in. I don't know if it was Enlightenment Scotland or post-Enlightenment Scotland, but it was the 18th or 19th century Scotland. He was quite a well-published and well-regarded author. So who is John Galt? Now has a – there was a John Galt. I don't think Ayn Rand knew that, but –
I asked Leonard, and he said that she did know about him, but she didn't think it was going to end up being a problem in terms of cross-reference or something.
Because he was too minor of a character. Yeah.
Okay. I think he's enjoying a bit of a revival just because of the book.
Well, right? She probably didn't expect that. She didn't expect the books to be read in Scotland, where they know about John Galt. So, but surprise, surprise, her books are being read in every corner of the known universe. So, of the known world, at least, and the non-known world.
So we have to talk a little bit about Trump now, it looks like.
I know. It's like every time we do a show, I avoid Trump all of my shows so we can keep all the Trump stuff for you, Amy. Because you are known now as the anti-Trump babe on Facebook. Although I don't know, can I say babe? Am I going to get into trouble?
Yeah. So today we have this wonderful, interesting press conference, and I think you didn't adopt my little title, but my title is taken from that great
little clip. Because I'm not convinced it's true. We'll see.
Okay. So let me give you my argument for why it's true. So first of all, here's the title. So the title is just squirrel, that this whole threatening of the government shutdown is really just to distract people from other things that we should be focusing on that are more important. So here's why, right? So why is it that he's bringing this up today, you know, this particular day? Does it have to be today that he has this little showdown with Pelosi and Schumer?
So this has been going on for weeks and weeks. So this conflict about the wall, and there's a piece of the budget, 80% of the budget has been passed, and everything's fine. There's a tiny piece of the budget, like 20% of the federal government's budget.
Tiny piece. Go ahead.
It's like $1 trillion, but it's only 20%.
Yeah.
Right? Has not been approved yet, right? It's not even approved yet. And it hasn't been approved because for months and months and months, part of this piece is the Homeland, what do you call it, the stupid agency Bush created?
Homeland Security?
Homeland Security.
Department of Homeland Security.
Department of Homeland Security,
yes.
Which is like almost 20% of the U.S. government. I mean, it has thousands and tens of thousands of employees. And the Department of Homeland Security, which Bush created by lumping in a bunch of agencies, creating this monster. This agency is... It basically wasn't funded because there's been this conflict about the wall. He has wanted the funding in the budget, and Democrats won't approve, and they can't pass the budget. They can't pass it without some Democrats supporting it in the Senate. And it's already passed. It's fine in the House. The Republicans can pass what they want in the House, but they can't in the Senate. So this has been going on and on and on and on. And Pelosi, you know, post-election, the Democrats were postponing to kind of deal with him until after the election. You know, they thought maybe they'd win the Senate and then they'd really have a lot of ammunition. So, and it was supposed to be discussed, what was it, a week ago. The government was supposed to be shut down a week ago, but then George Bush died. You remember George Bush died?
Oh, right, okay.
So George Bush died, so they didn't want to have this big conflict when all the ceremonies for George Bush was going on. So they passed a two-week extension to all the extensions they've already passed in the budget. So it's coming up. So it's not – the timing is not his creation. The timing is being dictated by this whole thing. So Pelosi and Schumer went up to try to cut a deal with him today. And I guess he
decided to turn on the cameras, basically.
Yeah, he decided to invite the press into the negotiations. And which is kind of fun and interesting, and which I like actually because it gives it's open and visible. And Pelosi, of course, and Schumer didn't want it because they're traditional politicians and they want.
Well, she was ridiculous because she kept just denying the fact that he had to have 60 votes in the Senate. I mean, you can get it started. As if there's any point in getting something started in the House if you know it's not going to pass in the Senate at all. It's ridiculous. I mean. So you get to see some of the farce. But, I mean, for me, when I think, is he doing this as a distraction? First of all, there's turning on the cameras, right?
Yeah. I mean, that could be the distraction. The issue itself is not a distraction, but the turning on the cameras could be.
Well, and then the shift of the issue, right? So I noticed as I was in the process of posting the story that the New York Times had ended up changing the headline. You know how they do.
Yeah.
So at first, the headline was, that he had demanded funding for the wall or he was going to shut down the government.
That's right.
And then I guess just before he was having this little showdown with Pelosi and Schumer, then I guess he took a step back a little bit. And what he kept saying during the conference itself was adequate border security, which it's just basically, does he like what he sees when it ends up on his desk or whatever it is? And that, to him, it's like he gets credit for taking a red meat sort of stand on the wall, but then he doesn't have to stand for any particular defined red line. You know, he just, well, adequate border security. It's not wall funding, because wall funding, I mean, everybody has some idea of how much that would be. And then if he doesn't get it, then he gets slammed for giving in to the Democrats or whatever. But he retreated. And so it's like, he made all this noise. I'm going to get the wall or I'm going to shut the government down. Then he retreated. Then they had the big press conference and everything. And it's, to me, it's this distraction. I wanted to post, there's a Duran Duran song called Paper Gods. And how we're ruled by paper gods, that it's really funny. And it would just apply to exactly what we saw going on in that press conference because it was ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous. Somebody on YouTube says, speaking of people like Patrick Henry, Pelosi, Schumer, and Trump in the West Wing?
Exactly.
How sad.
Exactly.
How sad.
The Duran Duran song, Paper Gods, go listen to it. I was going to stick it in the program notes, but I didn't get that.
I think there's something there, but I also think there's a bigger issue here, and that is, this is Trump tactics. He always does this, right? He sets out this, the Mexicans are going to pay for it. And then it's, well, we're going to raise a little bit of tariffs. And then it's gone. The whole idea of Mexico is gone, but we're going to build a wall. So he always sets out these, you know, goals, and then he retracts, and then he declares victory. You'll see that with China as well. I mean, they're going to cut a deal with China, I think, because he's afraid of the stock market. And the deal will be minuscule. It'll be the same deal Obama basically got, where China will commit to protecting IP. They've actually done something already. China just issued a statement in China to its companies as saying, we are committed to the protection of intellectual property and we will do this and this and this. Again, as a facade for negotiating with Trump. And, you know, the Chinese will give a little bit, and then he'll declare victory, see the tariffs worked, and we'll move forward. But so I think he always does this, but clearly he has a reason to distract, and he does do this. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if missiles get launched into Syria somehow or something like that happens in order to distract from all the mess that he has going on with the...
Well, and threatening to shut down, it's big drama.
Well, it's also, remember, it's that thing to shut down 20% of the government, because the rest of the government is funded. So it's only this little segment of the government that he's going to shut down that affects very few, relatively speaking, fewer employees.
Oh, so he's getting high drama out of a very small portion of the government, because this is the portion that affects security. Right. And that's one thing he was tweeting about. You know, this is about national security. And I mean, how could you disagree that it's worth, you know, shutting down the government in order to get adequate security, et cetera? Here's a question for you, because it got posted. By the way, the program notes that I put together at my blog, don'tletitgo.com, and somebody posted a comment there asking the question about the wall, in effect. Isn't this a valid thing for him to stand up for, saying, look, we need security. A wall is good security for our country. Should he be doing this?
If only I'd, you know, be more creative, then right now we would be playing The Wall. I love that song.
Right.
We don't need no institutions.
We don't need
no mind control.
We don't need no thought control.
That's right. Hey,
no
teacher.
Dark sarcasm in the classroom. Hey, teachers.
No, it's actually pretty good. Yeah, and as somebody who experienced the British, the English educational system in a British private school, I was all for tearing down that wall. Hey, teachers. All right. So yes, that would have been perfect right now. Tear down that wall. Right. And you remember the kids going through the grinder, the meat grinder in the film, in the video.
I didn't watch the.
Oh, yeah. No, you're not a Pink Floyd fan.
I listened to it, obviously, enough to be able to just recite some lyrics better than you.
Yes. No, I'm terrible with lyrics. I always make them up. I always turns out that it's different. OK, so let's talk about the wall. No, I mean, who's invading? Nobody's invading. What do you need a wall for? So it's ridiculous to have a wall. We don't need a wall. It's not like there's an invasion in spite of the caravan, which seems to have been dealt with. The whole idea, it's a massive project. It's not a project that can even be successful, because it would require massive amounts of eminent domain, which would be argued in court for years and years and years. So you're probably looking at several decades before you could actually build the wall. There's already environmentalist challenges to building the wall, because there's certain endangered species that would be hurt by the wall.
Some people have bought land along the border to try to block the construction of the wall.
It's just a massive project. Walls do not protect. People who want to come here will come here. They will find a way. Just like drugs will come here in spite of the war on drugs, the war on immigrants will not stop immigrants from coming in if they're committed to coming in. You know, people are talking about the Israeli wall. The Israeli wall is very different. The fundamental reason there is a wall in Israel is to keep out terrorists. And even there, I believe the wall in Israel is a sign of Israel's defeat. I believe the wall in Israel is a sign of Israel's capitulation. Israel should defeat terrorism, not build walls to protect itself from it. And indeed, even even the terrorists have found ways around the wall. And they have, when the terrorists have wanted to commit terrorist acts within Israel, they have been successful in committing terrorist acts.
I just saw news about another tunnel discovered or something.
Yeah, that's in the north. That's with Hezbollah. But yes, they will find ways to get into Israel. So Israel has to defeat terrorism. It is not. It's not an appropriate way to defend yourself from true threats. Building a wall is not an appropriate way in a modern environment. Israel, the Israeli wall, so people say Israel built a wall with the Sinai Desert because of illegal immigrants coming in from Africa. But it turns out that Israel procrastinated and didn't build that wall and didn't build the wall, and didn't, even though it had been approved by the cabinet, until there was a terrorist attack. Terrorists came in from the Sinai Desert and infiltrated into the Negev and committed a terrorist attack. And then Israel built this fence that separates Egypt from Israel. Israel is a unique country. It's a unique country because it is a country that is a constant state of war. The way you run a country in a constant state of war is very different than a way you run a country surrounded by friendly neighbors. It is a completely different mindset. It is a completely different way you think about immigration. You think about borders very differently when you are in a, again, not occasional war, but in a constant state of war, than when you are in a peaceful environment. There is no.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate a little bit, right? Okay, so we're in the globalist era, and just say that it's a lot easier for your enemies to get over to your neck of the woods. So even if, you know, you're not geographically located right next to your enemies, it's nonetheless today a lot easier for your enemies to get themselves into the friendly country that's right next to you.
Yeah. All right.
How about that?
So should we build a wall in Canada as well? Because they could cross the Canadian border. We've actually arrested people, terrorists, who've tried to cross the Canadian border into the United States, Muslims with bombs. They wanted to blow up the LA airport years and years ago, and that was came in from Canada. I don't know of anybody who's been arrested on the Mexican border trying to come in with bombs. So there is a threat, an Islamic threat. It's not that big. I mean, I've looked at the numbers for terrorist acts in the United States.
They just arrested some dude in Ohio who was planning to hit on a synagogue. So
yes, but was that motivated by anti-Semitism? Was it motivated by neo-Nazism?
Well, he says he was going to do it for ISIS.
Yeah, but he's a white dude, and he's not a Muslim.
Hard to tell anymore. Yeah.
He's a white dude. So yeah, I mean, always going to have crazies inside. But again, I don't know of anybody across the board from Mexico, who is a Muslim terrorist threat. And maybe they have been. I don't know. But it doesn't seem to me like it justifies billions and billions of dollars of building a wall. Now, if we were going to spend...
That's really the question. It's like the huge scope of the project, and couldn't security be achieved in a much more economical way?
There is no security problem. There are no Muslims gathering on the borders trying to invade the United States. If they were, shoot them. But there are no Muslims coming in mass, crossing the border into the United States. They are in Israel. Right? So Israel is different. Israel is surrounded by Islamic countries that hate it, with Muslims who want to kill it. They're on the border. There are no Muslims on the American borders. There are no Muslims trying to invade. Even Europe is in a different situation than the United States. You can imagine a wall in Europe because there's mass migration into Europe. There is no mass Muslim migration into the United States. No mass Muslim migration into the United States. I'm addressing the racists on my watch.
Well, and then also last thing I checked, I mean, I don't know how it is this year, but I remember that within Trump's budget, he still kept funding for refugees. So he had this thing where he's
Well, he has
keeping
no choice.
Funding.
He has no choice because
well,
it's the law.
But, I mean,
it's the law.
It's so silly. Keep funding for refugees and then try to, you know, put something through that's going to stand up in the courts, keeping out certain groups of refugees and not others and everything else and not, you know, run into court challenges.
Yeah, but the
that.
Law is such that he has to accept refugees. I mean, you have to change the law to stop accepting refugees.
Well, but do you have to actually fund and, you know, actually subsidize refugees coming into our country? Why did he do that? I know he had some discretion over the budget. I know he cut it to a certain extent. Like, why not just, you've got majority in the House and the Senate. Just
you would have to
of
change the law, and that's what they should do. They should eliminate refugees from the budget by law, but they haven't done that, and they're not willing to do that. So, that's the status. But yes, I mean, the whole attitude towards immigration, you know, people pretend that we're going to build a wall to protect us from Muslims, but they're not building a wall to protect them from Muslims. They're building a wall to protect them from Central Americans and from Mexicans who want to come here to work and to make a living for themselves. We can, you know, so don't, let's not pretend, right? If the issue is security, then, how about going after the Saudis, right? And we'll talk about Saudi Arabia in a minute. How about going after the Iranians? How about actually going after Hezbollah training camps in Venezuela? How about going after Hezbollah training camps in other parts of Latin America? How about actually going after Muslim terrorists rather than building a wall around the United States, which is a joke? So there is no
profiling.
There is
allows
no
profiling.
Islamic immigrant threat to the United States. And, you know, it's insanity, in my view, to spend billions of dollars. Look, What are the real threats America faces today? The real threats are a crumbling healthcare system where we are really going to die because we are not going to get good treatment as we get older. Real threat to the United States is a debt, a government out of control, spending money like crazy, a debt out of control, and this country is going to sink into a hole economically because of the debt that it has. We are overregulated. We are overtaxed. We are, you know, this country is in deep, deep trouble. Immigration is not a problem. Immigration is not an issue that should be on the top 10 issues that concern us. And the fact is that Republicans and Trump in particular have done zero. Or almost zero. They've done a little bit on regulation to deal with the real problems and actually made some of the real problems, they've made them worse. And all they do is focus on one non-issue. If we want to deal with Muslims, I've written about the solution, how to deal with Islamic terrorism. I know how to deal with Islamic terrorism. But immigration, we don't have mass migration. We don't have millions of people on the border flowing in. We don't have Europe's problem. We have people from Latin America who'd like to come to work in America. I've offered a solution on how to do that legally and effectively to help the U.S. economy and to help them as well and to not worry about the welfare state.
Right.
A wall is like the dumbest idea possible to do this. And again, just like in Israel, it is a sign of defeat. When you build a wall, you're acknowledging you can't handle defending yourself, and you can't project your own power onto your enemy so that they don't show up on your border, which is what we should do with the Muslim world.
Right, right. So, you know, especially given what you're saying there, especially also because you're informing me, I didn't realize that this showdown was over only 20% of the budget. They act like it was the whole thing when I was sitting there watching the conference and everything else. It seems to me like an attempt to distract from the real issues. So I was going to ask you, what is the state of these other real issues that I stuck here in the program notes? One of them, if you want to go there first, is this issue of the Senate potentially passing a resolution condemning the Saudi prince because of his involvement in the killing of Khashoggi, for example. What should be done about Saudi Arabia? Do you think that Trump is trying to distract us from that, for example?
Well, I mean, I shouldn't read YouTube comments because they're trolling me. But you know, the solution to Saudi Arabia is what I've said since 9/11. The solution to Saudi Arabia is to declare them an enemy of the state of the United States, to stop selling them weapons. Donald Trump, I mean, all these people online who are trolling me are concerned about Muslims. They really are afraid about Muslims. Muslims are going to come to America and destroy our way of life. But they support Donald Trump 100% in selling them weapons, in appeasing them, in declaring that they are the best friends of America and they are ally in our battle against Iran. I mean, it is the hypocrisy of these people is mind-boggling. They hate all Muslims except the Saudis because Donald Trump today loves the Saudis. Who knows about tomorrow? So, no, Saudi Arabia should be declared an enemy of the United States. That enemy should be taken care of in whatever way, diplomatically or militarily.
Certainly not helping by selling them arms.
Yeah, certainly not helping by selling them arms. By the way, if you want to ask me questions, there is a methodology for asking questions, which people know now, and that's called YouTube Super Chat. And I answer all YouTube Super Chats. And you can ask a question there. So instead of just throwing questions around, ask it in a way that guarantees an answer from me. So I think Saudi Arabia is a real problem for Donald Trump. I think you posted an analysis of his letter about his commentary about Kagmushi, and I think it was very good. I think what you wrote was right. I mean, Donald Trump is an appeaser, one of the most evil regimes in the world today, the Saudi regime. I don't mourn the death of Kagmushi, but I think all it did was illustrate how evil the Saudi regime really is and how it needs to be taken care of. And the fact that, again, people who are so concerned about Islam don't care one bit about Saudi Arabia shows that, you know, they're not thinkers. They don't think. So
when
Donald
Obama
Trump is
bowed to the Saudi king, you hated the Saudis.
Yes,
but
you hated
now,
the Saudis when Obama bowed to them. When Donald Trump danced with them, that was cool. Dancing is cool. We're all for dancing. Nobody dislikes dancing. And now that he basically is appeasing them, selling them weapons like never before and groveling before them, worse than bowing to them, now Saudi Arabia is cool and fine. And hey, even
oil prices.
Yes, he's negotiated oil prices down. It had nothing to do with Saudi self-interest. And of course, Saudi's trying to gain more market share. And of course, Netanyahu loves the Saudis right now, because right now Netanyahu, again, is another short-term thinker. Netanyahu is concerned more about Iran than about the Sunnis attacking him. So right now he is appeasing the Sunnis in order to protect himself from the Shiites. But,
So this will be rather embarrassing for Trump if after his statement again, which I've shredded,
I think
you
it will
find
be
the
marginally,
link in my blog if you want to see
big.
It. You know, he's on record throwing his allegiance behind the regime, despite the fact that it is a monarchy and the monarchs are involved in some bad stuff. But no, our relationship is with the regime. It's bizarre.
And
the Senate, if the Senate decides to pass this resolution, that's rather
It's embarrassing, particularly
for him,
given that,
and he would like to distract you from it.
Particularly given the Republicans are going to vote for it. A lot of Republicans are going to vote for it, and they've already voted, as far as I understand, they've already voted on a resolution that says that the United States should stop supporting the Saudi war in Yemen, which, again, I think is a pretty weak resolution, but stop supporting the war. And the Senate has passed that, counter to what Donald Trump wants. My guess is he'll veto that. But it's been a long time. I'll give the Senate credit. It's been a long time since the U.S. House and Senate have stood up to a president on foreign policy. So it's nice to see the Senate actually do this. Now, I'm not sure this is the issue they should have gone all out on, but it's at least nice to see them reassert themselves into foreign policy, which is a role that the Senate has and the House has.
Which would be the one that you would prefer? Which issue would you prefer?
Well, I think they should have sanctioned Saudi Arabia generally, not just on the war in Yemen. I think the whole war in Yemen is, again, altruism. Some innocent civilians died, so they were all upset. But this is, again, Republicans. Rand Paul was a big supporter of this, and he made it a big deal about civilians dying. But I think instead they should have recognized the inherent evil in the Saudi regime. They should have recognized the fact that Saudi Arabia is an enemy of the United States, and they should have actually gone after Saudi Arabia as such. rather than just taking out this Yemen, not supporting the Saudis in their attack on Yemen. So, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's hard to tell with Donald Trump because a lot of what he does is theater. A lot of what he does is reality television. And it's hard to tell if it's distraction or if this is just part of the game and this is part of the show. And it's hard to tell what is what leads and what follows and what's going on.
Like I said, the fact that he walked back what he was asking for. So at first it was funding for the wall, which is at least somewhat objectively verifiable. And then he goes back to this adequate border security, whatever that's going to mean, right? It's meaningless. And then he has this drama over something meaningless. To me, it smells of disgusting.
But he loves drama. He lives for drama. I mean, he played to his base by telling, at some point he says during that exchange, he says, you know, Nancy Pelosi or Schumer says something like, well, you'll be blamed for the shutdown. And he says, fine, let them blame me. I want to shut down the government. This is important stuff. And that is red meat for his base. That is so for him, this
right-wing
is great
signaling.
Television. It's reality television. It's good reality television. And the New York Times or Wall Street Journal, somebody wrote, oh, this was bad for him. No, he wants to take credit for this because he wants to say, I stood up for what you Americans believe in. I stood up for your wall. I shut down the government for it. Hey, look how consistent I am with your thing. So I think this is all part of the shtick. I don't think this is anything unusual for Donald Trump. Let me see if
people should remember that he
related.
Said Mexico was going to pay for it as well.
Well, they've forgotten that already. He cut a NAFTA 1.1, so version 1.1, so he's forgiven with regard to Mexico, and now the good guys, they're fine because he cut a trade deal with them.
Now, the other thing that I thought that, I mean, there's a list of them, but another thing that I thought he was trying to distract us from is the stock market.
Well, yeah, I mean, the stock market's a biggie, particularly given that about this time last year, he was boasting, and all his supporters were boasting on my Facebook wall, nonetheless, about what a wonderful president he was and what a great president he was, because look at the stock market and the stock market is standard. I pointed out that other presidents had done even better than him, presidents people don't particularly like. Done even better than him. That didn't help. But it's
What's the news today on it? How is it today?
Today it went down, and then there was the idea that a deal with China was imminent, and it went up, and then towards the end of the day, the deal with China seemed to evaporate, so it went down again. So it went down, up, down, very volatile. You know, it's been like that almost every day. It's funded by rumors. I think that the market will stay very volatile until the Fed decision next week about raising interest rates. I expect they will raise interest rates, and I think so does the market. But I'm not sure what the market response will be exactly to what they do. But I think it's going to continue. The volatility will continue until we have a trade deal one way or the other, or at least trade is resolved one way or the other. I think a lot of this is trade related, but it's also the economy is slowing down. There's a lot of indicators that the economy next year is going to be slower than it has been this year. Again, counter to the Trump hype about the economy is going to go gangbusters, it's going to be 4% forever. Already the fourth quarter is slower. Next year is going to probably be even slower. So I think there's a lot of people trying to, I think Trump is trying to, in that sense, I think there's more viability, the idea of distracting away from this. And then what happens if we get a recession? Actually, somebody asked me here, let me answer this question. With the housing market and stock market and the downturn, do you think we'll be heading into recession next year? I've already said this, I'm on record for quite a while, that I think we are heading towards a recession. I mean, it's easy to predict, but I think it'll be late next year or early 2020. I think we'll be in a recession. I think that's what the market is signaling right now. It's the S&P is down significantly from its highs. Bank stocks are down significantly for the year. And I think a yield curve is about as flat as it can be. And it even inverted a couple of times. And when the yield curve is flat, that is about the best, one of the best predictors of a recession that there is in financial markets. So it looks pretty good. It looks pretty high probability that we'll have a recession sometime in the next year and a half. Exactly when, I don't know. I can't predict those kind of things. Nobody can. But yeah, I think that's going to happen. And how does Donald Trump behave if there's a recession? Now, we already know he'll blame the Fed. He's already started to blame Powell as the economy slowed in the fourth quarter. Powell became his punching bag. And one of the reasons I think the Fed has to raise interest rates next week is to show that they're independent of Trump, as bizarre and crazy as that is. But that's what central planning is. Central planning is nuts. Always leads to irrational kind of decisions. So,
I mean, the other thing too is, does he think he can help save the economy if he can get funding for this huge infrastructure project, aka the wall, and stimulate the economy?
Well, that's a joke, because it's so small it wouldn't stimulate the economy. But I fear that what we will get between Trump and the Democrats is, as part of the effort to avoid a recession, or part of the effort in a recession, is I fear that the big compromise they will come to infrastructure spending, and there will be a massive spending bill that is involved in infrastructure spending coming out of this coming Congress. By the way, anybody who wants to ask a question about Muslim immigration into the United States, just put a couple of dollars to it, and I'll answer your question. I've answered it like 1,000 times already. So at least the main guy asking the question is dishonest, because he knows my answer. But please ask it. $2, you get an answer.
Another thing he might be distracting everyone from is the potential liability, legal liability, that he is subjected to because of the alleged illegal campaign contribution that happened when...
You mean
payments were made
to a former lover?
Women.
There was just a private payment that was made on the side that had nothing to do with to a former mistress who happens to be a porn star who is going to tell her story in the newspapers. The big issue is what's coming out of the Mueller investigation and what's coming out on the thing. Now, I think all of this is BS, because my complaints about Trump are not about minutiae about campaign finance reform. Campaign finance stuff, which I don't think is that important, and I don't really care that much about. He should be held to the standards that every politician is held to, which are pretty low standards. I think any politician who is thoroughly investigated would be found guilty of campaign finance kind of violations like these. He's probably worse than most, just because he is what he is. But... this is a real problem for him, and it's going to be something he has to deal with constantly over the next 2 years. And the Democrats in the House are going to be investigating it, and they might impeach him, and the Senate won't impeach him, but the House will. And it's just going to be a mess. And I think, It's really problematic for him, and he could face criminal liability because of the campaign finance laws. So I don't think the Russia stuff is that important. I don't think there's enough there to make it interesting.
Not yet anyway, right?
Well, but maybe there will be enough to make it politically interesting, but I don't think there was. Did he try to get dirt from the Russians on Hillary Clinton? Probably. Am I super upset about that? As compared to everything else Donald Trump does? No. It's like the impeaching Clinton over Monica. It's like, of all the things Clinton did.
But there were a lot of people who really thought that was important to do, and presidential conduct and
never
standards
did.
And whatever. And now when it's Trump, no, it's...
Of course, if you're a Democrat, you want to impeach Trump. If you're a Republican, you want to impeach Clinton. That's just the way it goes. But in terms of, I don't think these are the important issues of the day. I don't think this is what we should be talking about. That's why I don't talk about the whole Russia thing. And I try not to talk about it on my shows, because, he's a scumbag. They're all not decent human beings as president. We probably haven't had a decent human being as president, maybe since Eisenhower. And I hate Eisenhower. So, they are what they are as human beings. And what worries me about his ideas, what worries me, the wall is a much bigger issue than what he paid a porn star. The whole attitude towards immigrants, the whole attitudes towards the whole attitude towards China, the whole attitude towards trade, the whole attitudes towards zero-sum economics. Those are the issues that I think are important. And ultimately, his pragmatism, his philosophically, the nature of his pragmatism, the lowness, how low his pragmatism is. Those are the issues that I think we have to deal with in terms of Trump. I mean, this other stuff is just not that interesting. No, but it will bother him, and he will want to distract people away from it. So I agree with that.
Yeah. So there's
a distraction. John Kelly stepping away. I mean, John Kelly strikes me as a decent general military type who tried to do the best job that he could. Even he couldn't get along with Trump. No decent human being seemingly can get along with Trump. I think that's pretty well
established. I think the other thing he's trying to distract from, though, right, is so, I mean, first of all, he's already had an administration with record turnover, whatever that means. So he's had more turnover than others.
Yeah.
And so then Kelly's leaving. And he had somebody who was supposedly his first in line to take Kelly's place and got a public refusal from that candidate. I think, was it Ayers? I can't remember the name.
Who is the chief of staff to Vice President Pence.
Assistant to the chief of staff or something, right?
Yeah.
So, he got a refusal, and then he tweeted out there about how, oh, he's got, 10 other people that really want the job and who wouldn't want the job or something, but no names. I'm wondering if, again, that's another thing that he's distracting all of us from.
It all is connected. It's all this mess in the White House. It's all this mess with Congress and with Democrats in the House now and with Mueller's investigation. I mean, he's got a lot of crap on his hands, crap that has nothing to do with governing the country, but has everything to do with his personal conduct. And it's going to be a tough couple of years facing him. Somebody asked, they didn't put a dollar sign to it. So, Paul, you should, if you ask a question, you should put a dollar sign to it. You should use the super chat. But somebody asked if the stock market declining has to do with the Democrats winning the House. And to some extent, yes, but not totally. I think the stock market would decline even if Republicans had won the House. But the Democrats winning the House suggests two things. One, that it limits Trump's deregulatory ability because he can't do anything through legislation. And two, it will encourage Trump to compromise with the Democrats on things that Donald Trump, I believe, is a leftist. And it will encourage Donald Trump to compromise with the left in growing government power.
So I had a thought, right? So they had the big show today, and there he is. He's pretending to be this foe of Pelosi and Schumer, and they're really aggressive, and they had to turn the cameras off and have their argument off camera. And then Schumer goes public and accuses him of having a temper tantrum after and all this, right?
Yeah.
What if it's just all for show? So he's, I'll take full credit. I'm standing up. I'm giving my base red meat. And then in the end, what they're doing in the back room is they're going to compromise in exactly the fashion that you were just saying.
Well, the challenge they're going to
have this huge infrastructure thing. And really, they're all best buddies when the camera turns off.
Well, I don't think they're best buddies because I don't think he has best buddies. But I think at the end of the day, yes, this is all drama for the cameras. There's no question. Both of them are playing to their base. And the Democrats have to be careful because their base does not want them to be cozy with Trump. So they can't be too friendly with Trump. So I think at the end, we will see this kind of deal emerge. But I think both parties are going to play hard to get before a deal emerges. And the deal will involve big infrastructure. And maybe what the hell, they'll build a wall. I mean, they built bridges to nowhere. So a wall to nowhere, a wall that serves no real legitimate purpose, is something went weird on Facebook. I'm not sure exactly what. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're still there on Facebook, guys. Maybe you're back.
Okay,
you're back. No, it's back. So a wall to nowhere or a wall with lots of holes so the cows can pass through it and lots of other stuff, because there already is a wall on the Mexican border, and it has lots of holes in it because the courts demanded the holes in it, and it's got lots of stretches where because they couldn't apply eminent domain, there's no wall, and it's just it's a complete stupid disaster. But I think there will be ultimately a compromise made that involves big infrastructure spending. I just don't think it's done yet. All right, let's take some of these Super Chat questions, and then we'll go back to some of these other issues.
Yeah, because I want to talk about the one that I think they're all distracting from that's more important than any of that.
Which one is that?
The Google hearing.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm curious.
I'll make my argument.
Of that. All right. How is privatizing a national park for recreational use valid if the new owner doesn't really do anything to most of the natural landscape areas? There is of actual aesthetic value to its visitor. How is it valid for the state to own property for the purpose of national parks or purpose of recreational use? How is that valid? It's not valid. It's not valid for the government to do anything other than protect individual rights. And there's no right involved in having beautiful landscapes. So if a private owner ultimately decides, I don't think they would, but if they ultimately decide to build houses on the rim of the Grand Canyon, I mean, I could imagine Frank Lloyd Wright looking houses on the rim of the Grand Canyon being quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. What right do you have to stop him from doing that if he's willing to pay the price and willing to build and buy the property and build whatever it is? And if you want to preserve it as a natural landscape, then raise money and buy it from the government or buy it from developers or buy it from whoever and make sure it stays natural. But there's no value to natural scenery above and beyond what people are willing to actually pay for. That is, if you want the natural scenery, buy it. So invest in it. So there are foundations out there, and I respect the one environmentalist group I respect is the environmentalist group that raises money from people and goes and buys large swaths of forest and preserves them.
Were they called Nature Conservancy or something? I can't remember.
Conservancy, yeah.
I don't know if they still exist or they still do it the same way.
Yeah, they still do it the same way. Okay. And they use the idea of private property to protect things that they value. They value virgin trees, virgin forests. Then so be it. I don't value virgin forests. I it doesn't matter to me if they're virgin or not, whatever, right? The government has no role in preserving nature. Zero role. The government's job is the protection of individual rights, not preserving the state of nature as nature. All right, here's another one. Will a Democratic Socialist candidate be able to galvanize enough people for 2020 or 2024? I don't think so, unless they're facing Donald Trump. So I do think that a Bernie Sanders type candidate could get a lot of Donald Trump supporters to vote for them.
What about this Beto, whoever his name is in Texas?
Yeah, Beto O'Rourke has proved that he can galvanize a lot of people in Texas, nonetheless. And that
New York Times has been kind of floating him a little bit.
Well, he's obviously testing the waters for a presidential run. So I do think there is the potential for somebody to do that, particularly if they run against Donald. And then the question is, what do we do? What do people do if they face alternative Donald Trump versus a social Democrat? And it's not clear how people would vote. I think turnout will be very low in an election like that. And I think the Democrat has a chance of winning. I think one of the long-term consequences of the Republicans having elected and whoever voted for Donald Trump having to elect it, Donald Trump as president, one of the long-term consequences is the rise of democratic socialism as a legitimate alternative, as a legitimate point of view in America, because I think that Donald Trump has legitimized a lot of their talking points on the right. So he has, he talked about limiting trade. He has talked about, the plight of the working class in very similar terms as the Democratic Socialists have as well. So I think he's legitimized them in many respects. But there is a movement. There is a growing movement in the United States. And I talked about this on my previous two shows. I also talked about the deplatforming of the right on my last few shows, for those of you curious. Mm-hmm. I've talked about the rise of the kind of more extreme left, more radical left, and the more radical right as a response to the kind of plain vanilla middle of the road centrists, which have been ruling most Western countries for 50 to 70 years now.
Yeah. And so you think that there is a legitimate possibility of an actual near socialist winning?
Yeah, I do. I actually do. I think that is possible. You know, I consider in some respects, at least, Donald Trump to be a near socialist, certainly on certain issues. I don't think anybody's a real socialist out there. There are almost no real socialists. They're all statists, and they vary in how statist they are. And I you know, the one thing that we don't have, and the one person who won't win, is a non-statist, is a pro-capitalist candidate that we don't have.
Which is very, very unfortunate. Do you have any more Super Chat questions, or can I go into Google a little bit here?
Democratic socialism, housing market. Yeah, let's talk about Google.
So the CEO of Google testified on Capitol Hill today, and this is just another installment in this continuing discussion. You know, you could almost imagine pretty much anything that's going on out in the world, I can compare practically to, you know, in politics, to either Atlas Shrugged or 84 or both. And what I see going on with these hearings and all this discussion and stuff is something like you have, you know, with all the government bureaucrats and Atlas Shrugged, where they're going to, you know, make the most hideous controls, you know, shut everything, you know, clamp down on everything in the worst way. And they know that it's a disaster. They know that it's going to destroy so much good. And yet they just keep nudging each other to be the one to say that, yeah, we're going to take control over it. So they're having all these endless discussions. They keep bringing these tech leaders in front of them in Congress.
Yeah.
And all of the politicians grandstand. And as usual, the way that the New York Times describes it, you have conservative Republican politicians complaining about so-called censorship, filtering, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever it is, it's not censorship. So it might
it's not censorship.
It might be bias
or
whatever, but it's not censorship. Yep.
It's curation. It's filtering.
Yeah.
It's
bias.
It's refusal to host on a platform. You know, we can talk about it in various ways, right? But that's what the Republicans are complaining about. They think that Google is keeping certain content from showing up in our searches. And then the left wing, the, you know, usually the Democrats, their concern is about privacy. So we've got the left and the right both complaining about the big bad corporation Google. And they're all just talking, you know, this is horrible, this is horrible, something should be done is the implication. Oh, well, we wouldn't want to put regulations that are too crippling. You can just see the conversations, you know, and what the each statement that each somebody makes. You know, government needs to take control, but you are an American success story. We don't want to put regulations on you that are too crippling. This is just another installment. There was nothing big resolved as far as I can tell. They don't know exactly what's going to come out of this. But there's just this continuing conversation that these tech companies are big and bad, that they're threatening the fair distribution of content, however you want to talk about that. And, you know, that they are threats to our privacy. And in particular, the New York Times is very excited about the fact that Google tracks location data through the Android operating system that it has on the phones that people purchase. There's just been a big expose in the past few days about that.
I think this is another issue in which we might see a big grand compromise between Republicans and Democrats with.
And it'll be horrible, a disaster.
To regulate Google and Facebook and Twitter and who else, who knows who else. You know, Apple and, of course, Trump's favorite, Amazon. I'm not sure how they'll get Amazon in there, but I'm sure they'll find a way to get Amazon.
Well, Amazon's
in there.
Got the Alexa and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, Alexa's biased as well. Yeah. So, I mean, this is the reality that the right faces. The right.
And this is the thing. So it's like both the left and the right don't like what these companies are doing from different perspectives.
Yeah.
There is room for them to reach this compromise to unleash on us the worst type of agent that there could be with respect to either of these two dimensions, either free speech or privacy. Government would be the most inimical agent with respect to those. Because what can Google, what can Apple, what can Facebook, what can Twitter, what can any of these companies do with all this information that they get about you or anything else? They can sell you stuff.
They can sell you stuff and they know where you are. But no, I mean,
and government can do things to you.
I agree completely. And the government is going to get their hands on this. And there's no question in my mind that this is all leading up to massive regulation of these companies. And they're going to unleash the FCC. They're going to unleash whatever agency, or maybe they create a new agency for a new technology to go after them.
That'll help the economy.
It's a massive disaster, but it's I think inevitable. I don't see a way out of it because ideologically, the idea of private property doesn't exist. It doesn't exist in the right. It certainly doesn't exist on the left. And the right, you can see, is uncomfortable with it. So they're saying, "Oh, you're a great success story," but remember also, Google is the one they really love, because Google, from day one, Google has shared the wealth. Google has lobbied, has distributed cash to both Democrats and Republicans. They're all being something has been greased. Whatever has been greased, Google has done that.
The wheels are being greased.
The wheels are being greased. So Google has had the least amount of problems of any of these companies vis-a-vis politicians. But look, I saw a documentary. I think I talked about this. Somebody showed me a documentary. It's going to come out probably in the next few weeks, next 2 months, that really goes after Google. Google is biasing our results and biasing this. And look, the reality is Google does bias the results. I mean, they have to. Anybody who curates material biases by their values. The issue is, I think, ultimately, is that they're going to have to make clear, or if they were – if they were forthcoming completely, they probably will never do this, because I think they'll be regulated in the end. What those values are, how they curate, what the standards are, and let us judge whether we want to deal with them or not. I think that's the right business decision for them to make. But it's not a business decision that can be forced on them. They can do whatever the hell they want. It's their property.
Unless they commit fraud in some way, and then you go after them.
Yeah, if it's fraud, but none of this is fraud, because they've got very clever lawyers who've written the contracts in ways that none of this is fraud. I disagree with some of what they do in terms of the way they curate material. I disagree with what YouTube does. But on the other hand, I'm also incredibly thankful to them. I mean, imagine what the world would be like without YouTube. How would we be doing this video right now? What would we be doing? And they, not only can we broadcast this on YouTube, on Google in a sense, but they sell advertising on the show. They actually go out and monetize this for me. I don't have to go and buy ads. They do it for me. If they decide not to monetize my show, you know, fine. It's their effort. They can exclude me from their effort. And I have I might object. I might think it's unfair, but they have a legal right to do that. Let me just add one thing. I think this frustrates so many people. Mm-hmm. One of the things the right needs to figure out, well, it doesn't really need to figure out, because I'm not of the right, but one of the things the right should ask itself is, why is every CEO in Silicon Valley on the left? Why are the most productive? Why are all these engineers on the left? Why are all the people who work for Google and Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Amazon and everywhere else seemingly on the left? Why are the left, all the smart, productive people, why is the right stuck with, well, I don't know, not so smart people who don't become the greatest entrepreneurs of the 21st century and don't make billions of dollars? Why are they so few billionaires who are of the so-called right? Why are all technology people, or not all technology people, but a significant majority of technology people of the left? Maybe that says something about the right. Maybe that says something of who you are and what you represent. Maybe it's time to rethink your own identity and your own values. Maybe this is a sign that you have really lost. I mean, somebody says Yaron loves to generalize. All right. If they're not of the left, then why is there a problem? The reason there's a problem, The reason the right is being banned is because most of the people at Facebook are from the left. That's why an acquaintance of ours, somebody we know pretty well, you know, wrote that memo about the bias at Facebook and left. Facebook and is right. biased. Yeah. Google is biased. I know it's biased. It's leftist. The universities are biased. The New York Times is biased. Most of the media is biased. Most of the professions that involve the mind, seemingly, at least at the technology level,
academia,
are biased.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people should really think about carefully. All right, the alt-righter is going to ask me a question. He just put $2 in, but it looks like he doesn't know quite how to use Super Chat, so he just put the money in without a question. The fact is that all these companies do tilt left. And that should worry people about the validity of the right's positions. Because if all these really smart people tilt left, maybe there's a problem with the right. Now, the left is wrong. So them tilting left doesn't prove that the left is wrong, is right. But them tilting to left does suggest there's something about the right that is bad. So
freedom of thought, less reliance on faith.
Yeah, less reliance on faith, that don't believe in evolution, stuff like that, that you want to stay away from. You know, nationalism and you know, the alt-right. I don't know what happened today, Amy, but maybe it's because you're on. But I haven't had the alt-right on my YouTube chat for a long, long time. And today they showed up in force. So maybe it's you. Or maybe
it could be the topic, though, as well, right? Because it was actually about Trump, and so they want to come and defend him. Could be that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to take this question, even though I hate to because it's a shitty question. But because he put $2 in, I'm going to take it. Okay. If Charles Murray is right that ethnic groups, even Welsh and Irish, are different in innate intelligence, would that change your view? No, absolutely would not change my view. And ethnic groups, for all I care, all I know, do have differences in so-called innate intelligence, whatever component of intelligence that happens to be. But that the differences between the groups far smaller than the differences between individuals. And what I care about is individuals. And I wouldn't ever base any immigration policy or any other policy on
ethnicity,
innate on IQ tests, on so-called innate intelligence. So I don't think any of that is relevant. That's it. You got one question because you only put $2 in. I think it's the same Steve Jackson. I don't even know. I assume that's him trying to ask a question. But whatever. It's the same spelling. So anyway, what were we talking about? We were talking about, Google. So look, Google's biased. Of course it's biased. But the nice thing is, for example, the Patreon thing. I talked about this yesterday or the day before about Patreon banning Sargon Arkad. Sargon Arkad, who I know personally, who I've done events with, who I think is generally a good guy, even though I disagree with him on a bunch of things. I think what Patreon did by their own standards is wrong. I think it's by the given the statement of the CEO about their standards, they violated their standards by kicking him off. Whether those standards are the right standards or not is a different question. But I think it's wrong for them to have kicked him off. But you know what? Sargon Arkad is going to be fine. He's already found a different platform. He's already raising money on the new platform. I am probably going to join him on that platform. I think others are going to do the same thing. And where are all the libertarian conservative engineers? There's some, but you guys are not billionaires. So get your act together. Come on. We need more billionaires who are, I hope not conservatives, more objectivists maybe. We need more billionaires. And there are not enough of you. I'm not saying everybody is a leftist in Silicon Valley. But a majority, right? I mean, am I not?
And there might be a lot of non-leftists that are sort of in the closet there and stuff too.
Yeah, but it's still a minority. The fact is that it's a minority. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a problem. So I say it's a minority and people say I'm generalizing and I'm saying everybody's a leftist. I never said that. The fact is that the people with influence are influencing, are biasing all these things to the left. That's a problem.
You know, I keep at the top of my Twitter feed my little social media fantasy about the big red shrug button and stuff in hopes that it can have some influence, but I'm understanding that it's probably not going to. Speaking of just, you know, people conservatives on the right, if you want to call it. I heard the other day when you were talking about the fact the right-left distinction is sort of meaningless. So I am hesitating each time.
It's not meaningless. I think it represents something. But I think the idea that we are on the right in some way is wrong. I think we have to accept the popular view of left and right. I don't think that is an issue worth fighting over. And in that sense, today, both left and right are statists. And in that sense, we are not part of that spectrum. The spectrum is individualism versus collectivism. That's not reflected in today's left versus right. You can imagine a day where the left represented statism and the right represented individualism. Ayn Rand, I think, was striving towards that. But I've given up on fighting for a rational right. I want to scrap left-right, and I want to say we are different than anybody today who the world identify or who self-identifies as a rightist. That's what I want to do.
None of the above. Sorry. Nobody above the individual. So that's all title. You were supposed to laugh. So one example is this little, it ended up not being an exchange. I just answered Ben Shapiro the other day.
Yeah.
He still follows me on Twitter, but he's not answering. So someone asked him, they said, what similarities and differences do you see between Twitter deplatforming people over politics and bakers refusing to make cakes over religious views? And Shapiro comes back with, bakers are not a platform for speech. And I try to engage in the discussion.
The whole basis for saying that they wouldn't bake the cake was speech, was that they are a platform for speech, right?
Well, okay, they're not a platform.
Oh, they're not a platform,
speech, right?
Okay.
So they're speaking as bakers, right?
Yeah.
But they're not a platform for speech. But you know, the question is really, is that actually relevant as to whether either should be?
It's either
forced.
Private property, or you either have private property, or you don't have private property. That's the only relevant issue.
So then I ask him this question. I say, well, so maybe you're speaking from an ethical perspective, and you could see, well, if I'm a baker and all I'm doing is baking cakes, that ethically, I wouldn't necessarily feel any sort of obligation to bake this huge wide range of ideological cakes. Whereas if I'm purporting to provide a platform for speech, then ethically, at least, you know, from a business ethics perspective, I should allow a wide range of views. I should have a terms of service clear and transparent.
Yes,
and that's
the key, is the terms of service clear and transparent. But the fact is, they do allow a wide variety of speech. I mean, they allow us.
Sure.
They allow communists. They allow alt-rightists. There's certain people they've excluded. We don't quite understand why they've excluded those and not others. But that goes to the clarity of the terms of service.
Right. What he's implying, though, is that somehow bakers should be left free, where arguably these platforms for speech maybe should have some government control in there because they're platforms for speech.
Well, I haven't heard him say that yet. So he hasn't actually said it, but you're right.
He's implying that he didn't come back and answer, because what I did then follow up with him is say, look, it's actually maybe even more important that a platform for speech be free from government control and regulation. You know, because here we are. If you think right now that it's bad, just imagine when, I like to call it Bigly Brother because it's Trump, but you know, it could be Warren or Beto, you know, O'Rourke or whatever the next time, right? In charge of the regulatory mechanism over Facebook. And, you know, you can imagine, what is your Facebook or Twitter experience like? You know, you've got those sponsored ads in your feed. And, you know, maybe at first, the sponsored ad in your feed is going to be Trump, you know, daily address about whatever, you know, the 2 minutes hate, if for those of you who know 1984, whatever Trump is trying to get you mad about, somebody kneeled for the anthem, and you know, he's going to give you a 2 minute speech about it in your Facebook feed or something. Just imagine what that would be like as the sponsored ad, because it's now coming from government as opposed to a corporation. You know, at first you could scroll through it, and then eventually you're going to be forced to watch that thing before you can engage.
1984.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's where we're heading. So look, I don't know what Ben Shapiro's stand on this is. I mean, my stand is
he didn't answer.
My stand is private property. And I was glad to see that Brandon O'Neill, even though he's a critic of Google and everybody, it does not believe the government should get involved. So good for Brandon O'Neill from Spike Magazine. And I think anybody, this is the problem with conservatives. They believe in private property until it's inconvenient for them to believe in private property, and then they're willing to compromise. And they're big fans of eminent domain, and they're big fans of all kinds of regulations when it's convenient for them to believe in those things.
There's this other issue that they start to hang their hat on, too, is they say, well, right now, the government is granting platforms special freedom from liability for libel, slander, whatever. And it's because they are a platform, not a publisher. But really, if they are curating content, they're acting as publishers.
But that's bullshit. Right? If they were curating content based on whether it's pornographic or not, would that constitute publishing because they're curating? No, I mean, I see that. Jordan Peterson has used that argument. I think Ben Shapiro has used it a little bit. That's complete nonsense. There's a clear distinction between a publisher who hires people or pays people to write articles. They edit them.
They edit them.
Think about the turnover. Here, they might not publish one in a million. There, they don't publish a huge quantity of material. They only publish stuff.
But it's not even that, right? To me, I look at this as like Facebook exercises veto power, right?
Yeah.
So it's just complete a total up or down. Your post is going to be on their platform or it's not going to be on their platform. So they are not themselves getting into the content of the platform.
I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. It's a big part of it is they don't edit. And they're not paying you for content. They're not paying you to put the content up there. They're not reaching out and seeking content. They're letting you post what you want with some caveats, certain things they won't allow. And so those things, they could tomorrow have terms of service that says we don't allow objectivists. And it's completely within their right to do that. It's their platform. And it doesn't make them a publisher if they don't want Ayn Rand mentioned on their platform. It makes them stupid. It makes them maybe immoral, but they're not violating anybody's rights. It's none of the government's business. Oh, wait, we got limited time. We got a few super chats, so let's quickly do this. So,
and then I have two important things after your super chat.
Liberal Deutsch wants to say, I'm still having problems understanding. How can somebody just preserve, basically leave alone, ever be your property? Well, it depends what you mean by preserve.
I wanted to talk about that a little bit because you were talking about that earlier with respect to like a nature preserve.
Yeah.
And even if you want to make it just a nature preserve, you're going to do something about the borders and the no trespassing.
Yes.
And then also, and this is something that I guess we've seen in California be a big issue, there's a proper sort of a land management policy whereby you would do periodic burnings or you would, if there's overpopulation of certain species, you'd address that and stuff. So it's not like you just leave it completely alone, even if all you want to do is have it be this beautiful nature preserve.
And you would probably maintain some hiking trails and some campgrounds and stuff like that. But even if it's just nature, you would probably do some stuff to it. You wouldn't just leave it alone. And I think that answers Deutsch, I agree. You don't just buy property and leave it. It at the very minimum, you would fence it and do some clearing and some species management, which is what these entities do. Have you heard of The Correspondent, the Dutch news website that's trying to launch an English version via crowdfunding? I have not. Sorry. Were the 1980s the first stage of Ayn Rand's political influence in the world? Yes, I think it was. I think it was minor, but it was definitely there. I think the whole attitude towards capitalism, the whole attitude towards freedom, that was inspired by Ayn Rand. It wasn't, and it was the first little bit you saw. You saw that with Margaret Thatcher. You saw that with Reagan. Reagan clearly influenced by Rand. Many people around Reagan, but many people around Margaret Thatcher influenced, inspired by Rand. So not fully, not intellectually, but inspired. So I don't think the 1980s would have happened without Rand and Friedman and probably Mises and Hayek. Is happiness possible in North Korea or Venezuela? Even if you're a perfect objectivist in the world isn't free, you can never be happy. I think that's true. I don't think you can be happy in North Korea, Venezuela. values don't mean anything. You can't pursue your values. You're constantly deprived of the ability to seek your values. So yes, you have to live in a free world. That's why suicide is legitimate in our concentration camps, because you can't be happy in a concentration camp.
Now, Aristotle used to talk about that in Nicomachean Ethics too, that you could be a perfectly ethical person, and of course the proper reward of being an ethical person is happiness, and yet the circumstances of your life could be so onerous.
Yeah, so they're far smaller circumstances that would make life unbearable. You know, your loved one passes away, and I don't know, a bunch of bad things happen to you at the same time could make life unbearable. So there are a lot of things that would make happiness impossible if those things happen. But certainly living in North Korea, Venezuela, that's why it's so important to be able to leave. And I, for example, anyway, let's leave immigration alone. Wouldn't going after Saudis and Iran increase spending that we should be trying to avoid right now? Yeah, it would, but it's the one thing that you're supposed to spend money on as a rights protecting
government. Yeah.
It's the one job that you have. The problem with spending we have today is not so much on defense, although let me be clear, we spend way too much on defense. So I think even within the existing budgets, you could probably take out Iran and Saudi Arabia. And I don't think Saudi Arabia in particular would be hard at all or expensive at all to take out. All you'd have to do with the Saudis is threaten them and they would fold. The problem with American governments is they completely grovel before the Saudis. They never threaten them. They never actually use the implicit force that we have against the Saudis. Iran would be expensive, but still nowhere near as expensive as Iraq was or as Afghanistan was, because none of those wars were actually fought for victory. We're still in Afghanistan. We're still spending. Just end the war in Afghanistan, bring the troops home and go to Iran instead. So the way I would fight a war, and if you want to understand that, read Winning the Unwinnable War. You can get that on Amazon. Not as expensive as the wars that altruists and appeasers fight. And the problem with the budget is the corporate welfare, the social welfare, the regulatory agencies, the healthcare. The United States government spends, before Obamacare, 51 cents of every dollar spent on healthcare. I can't even imagine what it is today. Until you unwind all the different ways, all the entitlements, all of that, none of this is. Oh, Jesus, more liberal Deutsch. He's been asking, but he spends €5 on every question, so you can't turn him down because it's real money. Is killing a baby shortly before the cutting of the umbilical cord technically murder? It's not an entity yet by objectivist theory of rights. It is an entity. It's outside the mother's body. It's the umbilical cord is not what – it's a separately identified entity. It's individuated. It's an individual, and the technicality of cutting the umbilical cord, which, by the way, would separate from the mother anyway as the placenta. Is that the right word?
Placenta
comes out anyway. So
placenta is a town in California.
That's right. Placenta would come out anyway with the umbilical cord. So it's not like the baby is attached to the mother forever if you don't cut the umbilical cord. So no, it is an individuated entity, and therefore it would be murder at that point. All right.
That's a huge topic that we could do another day.
We didn't talk about abortion. We just talked about that one narrow little thing.
But abortion is.
That's a huge topic. Yes, we should talk.
We should do that one time. Maybe next week. No. We might want to table one of my questions for next week. We'll have to see because, you know, this is so involved.
I have to comment on this. Somebody says, don't call us trolls, Yaron. We like you, but we are not followers. We question you to make you stronger. What you're doing is not questioning me. The comments I've seen here are not questions. The comments you make about Ayn Rand, the comments you make about me, they're not questions. They're trolls. You're trying to insult. You're trying to provoke. You're trying to intimidate. If you ask intelligent questions, if you gave counterfactuals, if you used logic, that would be challenging. That would questions that would make me stronger. And I encourage that. I would love that. But that's not what you're doing. What you're doing is trolling. It's classical trolling. Just look up the stream. Look at what you wrote, Marvin. it was just insults out of nowhere for absolutely no reason, to, you know, implying what Ayn Rand would think about one position or another. That's not using logic. That's BS, right? You're bored.
It is. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I don't know why I even address these things. But anyway, you had 2 points you wanted to make.
I have 2 things. So first, well, one is the multi-part question. The first part of the question is, what do you think of pineapple on pizza? If you put pineapple on pizza, is it really pizza? We want the official objectivist.
So nothing I say is officially objectivist. So let's be clear. But you want the official position of the Yaron Brooks show. The official position of the Yaron Brooks show is anything is okay on pizza.
Oh, no.
Anything is okay on pizza. I mean, why limit people's creativity? Oh, my God. Of course, pineapple is legitimate on pizza.
You are an open pizzaist. Officially, you are an open pizzaist.
I'm an open pizzaist. Absolutely. I have eaten in innovative, fantastic, wonderful restaurants where the pizza turns into something completely different, and it's all good. Food is wonderful, and it should be played with. Pineapple on pizza is playing with food, and I'm all for it. So now you have the official Yaron Brooks show.
Oh, no. Okay, well, then I will – I guess I can have a Pyrrhic victory on the next one because there was a poll recently.
Yeah.
Which is the greater evil, pineapple on pizza, which you just said is not evil, or guacamole-flavored popcorn?
That sounds so good. That sounds so wonderful.
No.
If it's done well, how could anything flavored guacamole be bad?
Because guacamole is not a flavor, Yaron. It is a food group.
How can guacamole be a food group? Guacamole is like avocado mixed in with stuff, and it has a taste. And if you want to...
I am a native Californian. Guacamole is a sacred food group.
All right. I love pineapple. I love pizza, even though I'm not supposed to eat it. And even pineapple, I don't really eat because it's got
I've not seen you eat pizza in I don't know how long.
I actually ate pizza. I'm on a flight to London from Miami, and it's delayed and delayed and delayed. And right next to the gate is this pizza place. And all the pizzas are out in display, and they all look amazing. And none of them have pineapple on them. Maybe one of them did. But they all look amazing. And the smell of the pizza is just the gate. And it's like I held out for like an hour and a half.
Now, was it the smell of a pineapple pizza? What did you order? Which kind?
I don't remember. But anyway, I haven't finished the story. After an hour and a half of holding out against my better judgment of eating pizza, I went and got a slice. And it was so good. It was so delicious.
Did it have pineapple on it?
No, but I got so sick afterwards.
Oh,
and I can
you
only
don't
think,
eat it, right?
I can only think it must have been the pizza. I can't think of anything else. So next time I'm going to resist. But no, I don't eat pineapple because it has high glycemic index. So I try to avoid pineapple. But I love, and eat lots of, whenever I can, avocados and guacamoles. And if you can figure out how to
flavor,
get
like
guacamole,
some weird powder, some
what do you think
powder?
Of guacamole and pizza?
No.
You've never had avocado on pizza?
Well, avocado on pizza is different than guacamole on pizza.
So why not guacamole? Guacamole is just souped up.
Mexican,
avocado.
It's Cal-Mex.
You can have a Mexican pizza. That's Taco Bell has a Mexican pizza.
But okay, so I agree with Joe Sanders on this. I disagree with him on the use of the term censorship, but I agree with him on this. If you put those things on pizza, it is fruit on weird dough.
Fruit on weird dough is okay.
Or no, weird fruit on dough. Sorry. I must be getting tired. Okay, so I have lost completely in getting you in this debate. Because
no, I love weird food, and I'm a foodie, and bring on the weird food. I mean, and some things will taste disgusting, and that's okay. But experimentation and trying new things, what I hate is dogmatism, food dogmatism. You know,
the next
you
time you come to my house,
this.
I'm going to serve you pineapple pizza.
I've had pineapple pizza. It's called Hawaiian
pizza.
You're
hiding behind the glycemic index.
That's right. I've had Hawaiian pizza, and Hawaiian pizza is delicious. I mean, what could be better than ham and and pineapple, ham and pineapple.
With
ham,
tomato sauce.
Ham and something sweet always go together really, really well.
On.
I don't know why. Okay, we got two Super Chat questions. Am I asking too many questions, better elsewhere? No, keep asking the questions. It's just sometimes it's a little distracting because we're on a path and then I get pushed to that. But no, I love your questions. They're good questions. Ask away. I complain. I'll say something a little ethnocentric or racist. I'm Jewish. I complain.
When I get Super Chat, eventually, please come to my channel. Ask questions.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So I love the questions, and I love the fact you're willing to put your dollars or your euros where your mouth is. And your questions are always good and respectful, and I'm happy to ask them. And please don't pay attention too much to my complaining, because I just complain. You know, that's what I do. What are your thoughts on avocado on pizza? I just said I'm all for it. I have no problem with avocado. Do you regard Miami as a trashy city? Huh. Why Miami? I wouldn't have thought of Miami as a trashy city. No, I like Miami. It's a little like LA, a little superficial, a little too glitzy, too much, too much emphasis on, you know, the people there on how they look and stuff. But Miami's kind of cool. I actually like Miami. It's got all those, like, the waters everywhere, and you got homes on the water and beautiful, 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 beautiful homes. I mean, I think
humid,
I think
probably though, right? But I guess
that?
You've got humidity there. In
I've got humidity now. I can't complain about humidity anymore. I complain about it, but I live with it. So you know the thing. The day before yesterday really, my wife and I discovered, Revital and I discovered the worst thing about Puerto Rico. We went out in the afternoon. We were like, we wanted to go out and walk around. We went to some beaches and to some places that sell like street food on the beach in the beautiful beaches. Food was good, really amazing. And we were out there and hanging out. And then yesterday, really today, so it took 2 days, we discovered that some creature had bitten us. I mean, it must have been some, I don't think it was mosquitoes. I don't think there's mosquitoes, but like we are so suffering from whatever it is that has bitten
like
us.
Like a sand mite or something.
Yeah, like a sand mite must have done it on the beach there. And so we're suffering. So that's the worst thing about Puerto Rico is whatever it is that bit us. We're going to ask a native Puerto Rican tomorrow what they think it is. But I've like got like 15 bites on me, and Revital has the same, and it's painful. But we're getting used to the humidity. It's not that bad. I don't consider Miami a trashy city at all. I kind of like parts of Miami.
I haven't been there forever. And the only reason that I ever went there was to try to keep Ilian Gonzalez.
That's right. You
here.
Were there for the Ilian
that
Gonzalez
was
thing.
The yeah. one and only time I went there. Yeah. Well, I went there twice actually, but it was in that short time period when
Yuan is going to become Spider-Man. That's right. It was the wrong tick. Yes, they're very itchy and they burn. Ugh, they're horrible. Anyway, we didn't go in the water, so it must be from the sand or something flying around or whatever it is. In California, I used to get bitten by spiders a lot. But so, you know, choose your poison. I prefer spiders. I've never disliked spiders. Anyway, was there another point you were going
to
make?
There's just one other thing I wanted to talk about, which is at the very end of the program notes, go to my blog, don'tletitgo.com. I have this really cute Christmas video. Have you seen this one yet, Yaron?
No.
Gwen Stefani. Okay, by the way, I'm wearing my Gwen Stefani designed shirt. It's vintage because it's lamb. Let me see if I stand up so people can see. Okay, we got the L-A, I'm an M-B.
Okay,
I'm not a big Gwen Stefani shirt.
Do you want me to put it on the screen and play it?
Oh, go for it if you want to. It is so cute.
Let me see if I can do this.
So people who don't know, Gwen Stefani was the lead singer of No Doubt, and then she did solo this Love Angel Music Baby Lamb, and she had this clothing line that went along with it. And now she is in a relationship with a country singer.
Oh, okay.
And so they did this song together. Yeah, you can put it up. Are you able to put it up?
Why can't I share my screen?
Because I'm on with you? Does that make
no,
it that way?
No, you should be able to Should be my
say I could disconnect and then you can share it.
No, I should be able to share it with you on. That shouldn't actually stop me from sharing. Maybe because I'm streaming, I can't share it here. But which is a little weird. It should allow me
you
to
should,
share.
Yeah,
but anyway, I can do
to.
It. Sorry, guys. But where can they find it? Tell them where they can find the Gwen Stefani.
So they can find it at the bottom of the program notes on my blog, don'tletitgo.com. Or if you are at YouTube and you just Google is the generic term for search now, like Kleenex
That's good. Google.
But if you search on YouTube, which is owned by Google anyway, so they don't mind, Gwen Stefani, G-W-E-N, last name S-T-E-F-A-N-I, Stefani.
Yep.
You'll find her.
Good.
And
cool.
It's adorable. It's so go watch that immediately now. And if you're not in the Christmas mood yet, you will be.
It's always good to have something positive to end the show on. So,
and your own, you go watch it.
I'll go watch it. I'll definitely go watch it.
And let me know.
We're on again next week, right?
Yes.
Next Tuesday.
Yes.
Cool. Wow. Two in a row. That hasn't happened in a long time. In a long time. Do you like anchovies on pizza?
No.
You see, so, you know, but is it like irreligious, like pineapple?
No, I mean, it's, you know, so for me, I am not an open pizzaist. And so just like with objectivism, I will give deference to the creators of the entity of pizza, which are the Italians. And so as I understand it, traditionally pizza would have as toppings only things that are from that geographic region, which
so
would
because
not include
anchovies
pineapple.
Come from the Mediterranean, that's okay.
Right.
So if they put peaches on pizza, that would be okay because they have peaches in Italy.
Do they have peaches in Italy?
Of course. Peaches are big in Italy. Plums.
Oh, we'll have to, I'll
plums
have to consult the experts
you're
on that.
It's like
this is like you having to consult Greg Salmieri on certain points of objectivism. I'm going to have to consult the
origin,
experts, Luca and Benjamin.
And you know pizza was invented in New York City by Italian Americans. Anyway, the modern pizza. But anyway, the pizza in Naples is not that good because it's just basically bread with tomato sauce and cheese. They don't put anything on it.
You realize you thought you lost a lot of audience over Trump. You're going to lose like half your audience now.
Well, what the hell? I'll get another half. The pizza loving food experimenters. We're losing our audience anyway because nobody really cares about our position on pizza. All right, thanks, Amy. Have a great week. Oh, don't forget, guys, that if you like these shows, please support us on Patreon for now. As I said, I will have options other than Patreon. You can also use PayPal, paypal.me/IranBrookShow. Do you have a PayPal account, Amy?
I do as well. Soon I'm going to be distributing to supporters a PDF of the first chapter of my book.
Oh, wow. Very
cool.
I'll
announce that pretty soon in terms of level of support.
That is very cool. So go support Amy on Patreon and PayPal, and you will be able to get the first chapter of her book. That's cool.
Yeah. So you can wait for my announcement until you do it when I tell you what it's going to be. But yeah.
No, you should go support her now.
Well, support me now anyway, but if you're waiting for that, go ahead and wait.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.